Hello, everybody. I'm Katie Knight. Welcome back to Can You Put Me On Guest List? I hope everybody is well. I hope everyone's good. So today, super excited. I feel like I say I'm super excited for every guest, but I generally am just very excited about everybody that I have on this show. But next up, Drunken Kong. Drunken Kong are a Tokyo-based techno duo who are so incredibly talented and just, oh, such lovely people. I met them in Tokyo in, I'm going to say 2016, could be 2015. They were like the most amazing hosts, took us to some incredibly delicious restaurants, showed us around the city, and it was just so much fun hanging out with them. So I've wanted to have them on the podcast for quite a while. We finally caught up a few weeks ago over Zoom. I wish I could have done it in Tokyo and done it in person, but over Zoom was lovely to chat with them as well. And we just had a really good catch up. We haven't really seen each other since then, so it was really, really nice to have a chat with them, learn more about their career and what the scene is currently like over there at the moment. That is just one thing that I really, really enjoy, is learning about other music scenes and talking to people that are part of that scene and just kind of like teletransporting myself to different music scenes around the world and trying to imagine, I don't know, like what it's like and how different it is to what I know or what I've been used to growing up in Ibiza or in the UK. So this was a real good example of that, learning about the music scene in Tokyo and in Japan. And and just having a really, really good chat to learn a little bit more about the music scene over there. So really, really interesting. And as I said, they're just absolute gems. So lovely to have them on the podcast. And I really, really hope that you enjoy this episode too. So let's get into it. This is Drunken Kong here on Can You Put Me On Guest List.
How are you? Long time.
Yeah, I know. It's been a really long time. I'm good. I'm in Ibiza at the moment. It was the Amnesia closing party on Saturday. So okay. I've just come here for a few days. But yeah, I'm really good. How are you guys?
We're like in Tokyo right now, just full of tourists because we just opened the border, like Japan, in May. So now it's like full on. Yeah.
Do you know what? That trip, when I saw you guys, I think that was like one of the best trips I've ever done. It was so good. I loved it. I just blown away by Tokyo.
Yeah, I hope you can come back and hope we can hang out.
Yeah, I hope so too.
No, we're actually going to Osaka this weekend to play with Christian. Christian actually just arrived.
Yeah.
He's here in Tokyo right now.
Love him. Say hi to him.
After this, I'm going to go see him.
Okay, please say hi to him for me.
I will.
Okay. So we're going to start off just talking a little bit about your beginnings. And I would love to know what it is that got you into music. Where did your love for music come from? And what kind of music did you grow up around when you were both younger?
Okay. So to start off, for me, it was like, it was game music, pretty much. Like, in Nintendo, like all these old games, like was like the first introduction to like electronic music, and this really influenced me in, you know, these kind of sounds, basically futuristic sounds. And then gradually I got into listening to different kinds of music, pop, like Japanese pop music for a bit, and then I got into hip-hop. Because hip-hop, like, it's always been big in Japan. So hip-hop was, for me, like, a big step into really listening to music. And then when I was, like, I don't know, like, in middle school, like, 14, 15, the electronic music scene started happening here in Japan. And that's when, like, I started going out, you know, to clubs. And then one of the times I was in a club, that was the first time I ever listened to like electronic dance music, which was like, for me, it was like, wow, you know, because it had like really futuristic sounds. Some sounds kind of reminded me of game music too, like, which I grew up with, and then, but you know, things that make you dance too with beats and everything on it. So like for me, like this was like the biggest step and inspiration into becoming a DJ and getting into electronic music.
Gaming is a big thing over in Japan as well, isn't it? Like Nintendo's and stuff like that. So I understand where that's come from.
Yeah, especially like, you know, the original Nintendo games, like even like Pac-Man and all these, you know, the old school games was like, it's developed so much that it's not really like computer music anymore. You know, they put like orchestra and all this, like it's gone to a different level. But yeah, when I was a kid, it was still like the beginning of Nintendo, Super Mario Brothers, and all these really, you know, basic games that kind of shaped the gaming thing. But so yeah, it's very different now, but definitely games are like a big thing here too, like even now. And we get a lot of tourists actually going to these retro game places to buy like old Nintendo games and stuff. Yeah, so there's a whole culture for that. Yeah.
I remember when I was going over there, I was blown away by the arcades and just all of these gaming places. It was like, really yes, cool. Crazy. I love that.
Yes.
Did you know that you wanted to get into music from a very young age?
Me, actually not. Like I was more into sports. Like I was playing like a lot of tennis when I was in middle school. So I wanted to be a tennis player when I was
really
So I was full on into tennis because my parents were into tennis since I was very young. But yeah, suddenly one day, like, and I started going out at night, going to clubs, and then from there, like, it became my passion, and then suddenly, like, changing direction.
And then they're totally different.
Yeah, totally different.
Nice.
Yeah, my parents weren't happy in the beginning, but you know, of course, with all these years, like they're happy with me doing music now.
Yeah, are they?
Yeah, yeah.
Did they like you stuck? Like, have they come seen you play and stuff like that?
They haven't, because a lot of the ones are at night, so it's hard like for my parents to come out late night. But yeah, definitely, like one of these days I would love, you know, to have my parents come by to see us play. Yeah, because they've never seen us play.
How was Drunken Kong formed? How was that born, the duo?
So when did we start? 2011.
2011.
And we just kind of got started making music together. Like at that time, I wasn't DJing. Kyoko was doing her own events. Yeah, and then she was the DJ basically. So we just started making music for her to play during her sets. And for me, that was really fun, you know, watching the audience enjoy. And that's how we kind of gradually got into making music.
How did you get into music? Where did your musical influences come from?
So I was playing the piano, and I listened to classic music, and suddenly my mind changed. So I was a reggae DJ.
You were a reggae DJ.
Yes. I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Reggae, yeah. I have been to Jamaica by now. Oh. And but in Japan, so reggae thing is very small. So big artists didn't come to Japan.
Mm.
And so hip hop music was very popular in Japan, so I have to play reggae and the hip hop mix. Mm. And so I was changing my style, so hip hop, house music, blah blah blah. So, like, old junk, I played old junk. So, suddenly, I like techno music.
She kind of worked her way up.
Yeah. And
techno
up.
Became her thing. Yeah.
Was techno? What was the techno scene like in Japan at that time? Was that big and growing, or was it still quite small?
I think
it was very. It was like something very new. for Japan, and the scene actually was quite big at the time, because it was like this big wave of techno or electronic music in general. So they had a mix, like because at that time the genres it was more like mixed up for festivals and stuff. So you would see like techno artists playing with like trance artists, or like everything was just kind of mixed. So it was a really that time is when I actually started getting into the club scene, and yeah, it was like huge. Like there were parties like every day.
Oh, really?
Yes. And all the big DJs, like they would come to Japan and they would play at festivals, different clubs, and also in very intimate spaces too, with capacity of maybe 150, 200 people. But you see like Chemical Brothers playing, doing a DJ set there. And it's crazy. Yeah, everything, so much going on during those days.
And what about now? What is the scene like there now?
Now, like, it's getting better.
Yes,
I think, because what it kind of, the scene kind of, in a way, reset during the COVID times, because everything just stopped, and there were no international DJs coming in, because until then, it was like every week, you know, every venue, there would be someone playing, but then suddenly it just became zero, and then the scene kind of stopped for a while. But it slowly rebuilt during the COVID times, just with DJs, you know, based here in Japan.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think like it kind of went a bit like small, obviously, like because of course people didn't go out too during those times. But it made a new community, and it made a very strong base like community here in Japan. So now with tourism and the borders opening up, it's just like the energy here for parties, or it's like really good actually right now.
You just had Ultra over there as well, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
How was it? Looked insane.
It was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah, it was amazing, but very hot.
Yeah. What was it?
Yeah, this year it's so crazy, crazy hot.
Yeah, like it was like a heat wave, and it was much hotter than what it usually is. So
in Europe also.
Europe, yeah. I think also sometimes there's a big
heat
wave.
It's still hot. Yeah, here right now it's like 28 degrees today, and it's the 16th of October. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same thing. So yeah, that weekend was just like really hot, but it was fun. Like people are enjoying, and yeah, I was very happy to see the scene really coming back.
Yeah. Was there people from Europe, from other places around the world, or was it mainly people from Japan visiting Ultra?
I think 19% Japanese.
90%, maybe Japanese. 90% Japanese. I would say it was more a Japanese like crowd, but there was also a mix of people and tourists too. But I think for tourism, the club has more mix of like a balance, basically, is what I feel. Because yeah, they want to party at night, and so sometimes like venues you'd see like maybe 80% are tourists right now.
80% tourists. Wow, that's a lot.
Tourists, yes.
That's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah.
That is a lot. So what are the main what are the main clubs in Tokyo at the moment?
At the moment, for techno, it would be Womb. Mm-hmm. There's a venue called Vent.
Yes, I went to Vent actually.
Yes. Okay, yeah. So you know Vent. And then there's a new venue that opened this year, called Zero, which is in Shinjuku.
Yeah.
So I think these are the three main venues for underground music. And then you have a smaller scale venues, like a lot of them open during the COVID too. So you have a lot of venues that are like probably like 200 people capacity.
Okay.
Venues. So there's a lot of things opening. Like every month you hear something new.
Something
like
new.
Zouk, for example, they just opened like I think a couple months back, or maybe last month. Yeah, so definitely it's getting active here.
Lots happening. What about other cities around the world? You said that this weekend you're playing in Osaka, right? As well. What are the other cities around Japan like? Are there other cities that are having a real growth in the presence of electronic music?
I think, well, Osaka definitely does have a scene. And then Okinawa, for example, they're slowly doing more events, electronic music events there, which is really cool because it's kind of like it's a tropical island, and it's like it's in Japan, but it's very different from the mainland Japan. So very different culture, different style of living, and very nice beaches and everything. So yeah, Okinawa actually is slowly coming up. And then there's a, I think in the future, I'm really looking forward to Fukuoka because, which is in Kyushu, the south part of Japan. They just opened a new venue, which looks really cool. I've never been there yet, but like it looks like really nice. So slowly, slowly, I think other cities are starting to open up, and more electronic music is getting accepted more and more.
Nice. What do you think are some of the similarities and differences when comparing the Japanese scene to the European scene, for example?
So similarity.
Similarity. Yeah, Japanese people love dance. So because so Japanese culture is a matsuri,
Yeah, it's like a festival culture. We
yeah.
have a culture, Matsuri culture,
Yeah.
which is basically have people dance to Japanese drums.
Okay. Nice.
So yeah, so I think it's in that sense, like Japanese people, they love to dance, they love to
Yes.
party, and they drink a lot.
A drink. Yes, drink, drink.
Do they
A
really? Are they
lot.
big
No, a lot. Yeah,
drinkers?
nonstop. Yeah.
Really? What's like the most
Yeah.
popular drink? What do people drink?
Maybe Japanese sake. It's very
Oh,
popular.
I love
Very popular, yeah.
sake.
Very strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sake is very good.
Yeah.
Do people
Or
drink that
like,
on a
yeah.
night out then? Is that like a night out drink? You'd have sake? Because I just imagined that it's just been like a dinner thing, like having a glass of wine or something. But people actually go and party and drink that.
Yeah, like I think it's getting more open with that. Like the I think Richie Houghton sake definitely changed the image of how
True.
where you can drink sake.
True. I would be so drunk if I drank that all night.
Yes.
I just have two glasses and I'm drunk already. I couldn't imagine. But I
No.
do remember when we went to an event and I remember thinking like how much people danced, like
Yes.
going crazy. And I think also it
Yes.
was Halloween. I think it was Halloween weekend as well. And so everybody was dressed up and it was just mad. It was madness.
Yes. Yes. Halloween here is crazy. It's crazy. Like I try to stay away from it because it's chaos.
Are you
But
playing this?
we will play Halloween
Yeah,
party.
but we're doing a party event actually on
Yeah.
Halloween. So yeah, we're really looking forward to it, and yeah, it should be wild.
Are you getting dressed up?
Yeah, we're planning. Still a secret. Maybe we have to find
Maybe.
the right theme.
Your theme for it. Oh, how
Yeah.
much, so much fun, so much fun. So, you hold a residency at Tokyo's legendary club, WOOM. First of all, since when have you been residents there?
We started, I think the first party we did was 2014.
Oh.
Yeah, but like basically we got this resident night to kind of learn, and it for us it was like one of the best things that happened for us at the time, because we really learned how to like organize parties and what it takes to actually do events, because until then we would get booked for events. But yeah, this kind of gave us an experience, and also for us to learn what it takes to actually create these events.
Yeah.
And so it for us it was the first time thing to do it, especially at a place like WOOM. There's a lot of pressure for us to do it, and a lot of learning in the beginning. But yeah, gradually started doing more and more, and currently we have 3 to 4 nights like each year.
3 to 4 nights each year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yes.
When's your next one?
Next one's next month. Yeah, we're doing one next month. Okay. Yeah. And we're doing more next year. But like for us, like we personally don't want to do too much because we want to kind of give it like the special feel to it.
Yes.
Yes. Because, you know, we've all had the choice if we, you know, want to do it every month or every 2 months, but we kind of felt maybe eventually we want to take it there. But right now we want to kind of keep it special so that when people see that we're doing another edition of that, you know, people get excited, because if we do it too much, we feel like, you know, people might start getting used to it.
Yeah. Sometimes it's quality over quantity, right? Like do small special ones rather than overdoing it every single weekend.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So was doing it before this residency, was doing events something that you'd always wanted to do, or was it just something that they proposed to you?
Actually, it wasn't our idea. They proposed it to us. Because also like having your own events helps you in the scene. And it gives you like a stronger identity of who you are in that scene.
Yeah.
And this really helped us, and to be able to do events at WOOM is, and we used to book like a lot of international DJs to play for our parties, but we actually changed this direction during the COVID. Because we kind of felt, it's like, you know, it's also good to have a Japanese lineup.
Yeah.
To also have a different vibe comparing to a different, you know, to other parties. So we kind of changed our direction during the COVID, and we've been getting great results. Our parties are doing really well, which we're very happy. So for now we kind of try to keep it the way we're doing now and see how things go.
Yeah.
What are some of the artists that are really upcoming or ones to look out for, Japanese artists at the moment, or maybe some that are playing for your party?
There's a lot of good Japanese DJs. But on a international level, like I think it's the thing is like they a lot of people here, they don't release music, so I think it's a bit difficult to get into the international scene. But like in terms of DJ, like the quality of music and the quality of mixing and performance, there's a lot of upcoming DJs, and I hope that that internationally, you know, this will happen. I think for a lot of DJs that are coming up to play, and I think that will happen eventually, you know. I think it's now it's like things are getting more international, things are getting more connected, that it's you know, and that's what we're trying to do too, is to kind of nurture like some of these younger artists and give them challenges to see, you know, what they can do. And for me, the main thing I think is now it's like producing music too is a big part, you know, of becoming a DJ.
Yeah, no.
I mean, absolutely. For us, this is how it really helped us, like for us, like releases for sure.
Yeah. What do you think it was that kind of got your name out? What was the turning point in your career? Was it a certain release? Was it a certain gig? Like, what's that moment where you're just like, okay, this is it?
Definitely for us, it would be releases. I think the first like really big point for us was releasing on Tronic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like this, this really for us, opened our doors internationally.
Did you and Christian Smith have a relationship then before? Did you know each other, or how did that kind of come about?
We met at WOOM actually.
Oh really? Christian plays a lot in Tokyo, doesn't he?
Yes, yes. Yeah. So Christian's been playing here for a very, very long time, and one of his part. I mean, we're both a big Tronic fan, Christian Smith fan. So yeah, we went to listen to him at WOOM, and then we were lucky enough to meet him, and we started talking, and from there, I had like a bunch of new music that I wanted to send him. And that actually became our first release on Tronic.
Oh, really? And that was back in what year?
That was 2015.
Oh, yes. Christine is such a great guy as well.
Yes. So, yeah, he really helped us out coming from like a local scene to an international scene. Like, he really opened doors and possibilities. And I think, yeah, this was like the key thing for us and how we kind of built our name.
Besides Christian Smith, because I know he's very popular over there, what other artists, international artists, are very popular, especially in Tokyo?
Richie Houghton would be one. Savan Vath would be another. I think Dubfire. Also, like Josh Wink has a very strong name here. And Jeff Mills.
Jeff Mills,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's been coming to Japan ever since the beginning. I would say so.
So yeah, he's a strong name.
A very strong name. Mm-hmm. So even now, like when he comes, there are a lot of Jeff Mills fan. And it brings, of course, the newer generation too, but like the older generation that don't come out so much to events now, you know, with you know, having families and with work, like they would come out like if someone like Jeff Mills would play.
So yeah, that's a really interesting point because Jeff Mills isn't, obviously a new name. It's somebody that's been around mm-hmm. for a really long time. So does that still attract younger crowds that probably have just started maybe going out? Is that still like a real popular artist to see for them as well?
Yes.
Interesting. So he's brings in both crowds, really, people that wanted to party, that have been partying for a long time, and then people that have just started partying.
Yes. I don't know what it is. But yeah, it's like once in Japan, if you have a name, like it, I think it kind of gets passed on to like the younger generation too. So yeah, like I was very surprised, you know, to see a lot of young people going to the parties. But I think like the venue also or the promoter builds the hype, which kind of excites the younger generation, they get interested and they want to see this. And also Jeff Mills, you know, with the 909, like the live he does. Yeah, that's something, you know, you don't really see much. So yeah, I think like all that kind of blends in. And yeah, he always, he has a very strong fan base here in Japan. Yes.
So just going right back to the beginning of the conversation, you were saying about how reggae used to be a popular genre. Is it still popular there now?
Reggae,
yeah,
like music, and now so reggae music is getting down.
It is okay.
In Japan. So maybe I didn't see the reggae club.
Yeah, it's compared to before. I think it's gotten smaller, but the Japanese reggae scene actually is getting bigger. So there's a lot of Japanese reggae artists. But they're like, it's like they're mixed with hip hop, I would say. So like before they used to have just big reggae festivals, but I think there's less now versus 10, 20 years back. But there's a lot of Japanese reggae artists that are coming up.
Wow. I would never have guessed that you would have said that. And I never knew that reggae was a really big thing over there then.
Yeah, actually, like outside of Japan or Tokyo, like if you go to the more rural areas, I always ask the promoters, so what kind of music is the most popular? And I was actually surprised that it's mostly hip hop and reggae.
Yeah.
So, but it's like Japanese reggae artists. Yeah.
Japanese reggae artists. I'm going to have a look at that later. It's going to And hip hop obviously is massive over there still.
Hip hop has always been big, yeah.
Yeah. If you had to choose three of your biggest career highlights so far, what do you think they would be?
So the biggest, I would say, of course, the releases on Tronic.
Yeah, three.
And then our recent release on Drum Code, like on the release side, like this is like these two labels are labels that we've always what we've always looked up to and that we always wanted to release one day. So this definitely is like a dream come true for us to be able to release on these two labels. So this definitely also going back to our residency night at WOM, last year we did a first all night, like open to close set. Yeah, so
maybe
this
from 7 or 8 hours.
Yeah, we played like 7-8 hours.
That is a long time.
It's a long time from beginning to end. So this for us was really, it was something new, and it kind of expanded our possibilities because we've never done this. We've never played for that long, and it kind of opened up new doors and possibilities musically too, because usually like when we play in Japan, we play more on the peak time sets. So, you know, actually starting from zero, like nobody on the dance floor, to the very end was like a completely new experience for us. And we actually enjoyed it like a lot. Yeah. So yeah, we're doing one next month too. Yeah.
At your party at WOM.
Yes. Yeah. So basically things really worked out. We got great feedback. So we talked to WOM and decided that we should do this once a year.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah. Yes.
Before doing that all night long set, what was the longest you'd played for?
The longest we played is like maybe 3 hours, I would say.
Okay, so that's a big difference from 3 hours to like 8 hours. Yes, that's an extra 5 hours there. My goodness. Whenever I see some people do like these really long sets, I'm like, what if they need to pee? What are they going to do?
Yeah.
At least there's two of you.
Because we're a duo. Yeah, we're a duo, so it helps.
And what would your third one be?
And then the third one for us was we played at this venue named Ageha, which unfortunately, it's very sad, it's now gone due to some property things. Like it closed last year, and this was the biggest venue in Japan. Yeah. So it'll fit, I think, like 3,000-4,000 people.
Wow.
And yeah, it's not in the central area of Tokyo. It's a bit on the outskirts of Tokyo. But like this venue was like, places they would do like massive parties, and for us, like we actually, the first gig we had as Drunken Kong was at Ageha.
Oh really? So that was like a special place for you.
It was a special place, but the thing is, like, we never got to play the main stage. It was because there's four stages, and so we would always play at different stages, and the actual final party, we got booked to play at the main stage at the main like peak time hour.
Wow.
So for us, this was like, it meant a lot to us because it was like the starting point for us. And then to get booked on the final night was like, we couldn't believe it. You know, it was like, we finally, because all these years we're like, it was like the people ask us, you know, I was like, have you not played in Japan or in Tokyo especially? And, you know, we would always say, yeah, the main stage of Ageha, and then it actually, we got booked for that on the very final night of the history of the club.
Oh, so that was like the goodbye, the ending of the club. Did you know
ending? That was the final night.
Did you know that was the ending? Like it was, the party was for like a goodbye party.
Yes, because we already knew that, like, it was a big news that this venue was going to close. Mm. But then, when the offer came in, the party name was called the Final Night.
Oh, it was.
Yeah. Wow. So it had a very deep meaning to us because that was where we started, you know. So it was just like, wow.
That must have been a very strange night, like mixed emotions, because from one side, it's somewhere you've always wanted to play. It's the first ever venue you've ever played at. But at the same time, it's a legendary club that's being closed down. So it must have been really mixed, I guess.
Yeah, it was a very emotional night. Yeah. Like, you know, you would see like a lot of people, you know, in tears because it built a very big, it was a very big part of Japanese club history, like party history. So yeah, for us too, it was like one of my, it was actually the, like I used to live in LA when I was a student. I used to go to university there, and that was the actual first club that I went when I came back to Japan, and I was just amazed with the size. I was like, whoa, and like really good sound. And yeah, it's like for that to be gone was, you know, is very sad. But at the same time, when we got booked for it, it's like I didn't know how to react. You know, of course we were happy, but
happy and sad.
How long was the club open for?
I think it's I don't want to make a mistake, so I'm double checking. It's 20 years, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. You have it?
Yeah, 20 years. 20 years.
It was open for 20 years.
20 years. And they did many big techno nights, to house, to hip hop, even reggae, like everything, like they did.
So it wasn't just a techno club. It was a club for lots of different genres of music.
For mainly electronic dance music. Yeah, was Mania. The thing. Yeah. Wow. So yeah, it was a big part of Japanese history for the dance scene. So yeah, it's very sad. And but yeah, for us, you know, it was like when we got booked, like I was like, tears were about to come out. I was like, oh my god, I cannot believe what just came in.
Oh, what a moment. What are the hours like in Tokyo? What time do clubs have to close on a morning or at a night?
It depends, but usually around, I would say 5 a.m.
Okay.
5, or some venues go to 6. But okay, usually 5, I would say, yeah.
What time do
but
people start going out?
There's always after party.
So, yeah, there are
but many after party places too.
So there are like legal after party places.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Is after parties so like a big thing?
It is a big thing, and some people just come for the after parties too. They wake up, they wake up around 5 a.m., 6 a.m. because the party's going until like evening or like late afternoon. So they would just come from the morning. Yeah, that's how some people enjoy it. Some people that can't really go out at night, they would come early morning. So, and it's they're like actual venues that focus on these time zones or time slots, basically. So yeah, it's perfectly legal, like, you know, proper like venues. So all these smaller size venues, they have a lot of the venues, they do after parties mainly.
Okay, so it's not like here where people are like throwing legal villa parties and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
this
yeah,
is
no,
actually
no,
for
yeah.
this. Yes. Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to come back to go to a party there.
Yeah.
So it's
never ending sometimes with events. Yes.
Yeah, there's something happening all the time.
There's something happening all the time.
Going back to your release on Drum Code, I believe this is your first release on Drum Code as well, right?
Yes. Yes.
So tell us a little bit about this release, how it came about, and how that's all worked out with Adam.
Yeah. Yes. Basically, we've been trying we've been sending demos for a while for over the years. And then it was in early this year that we finally confirmed our first release, and it was just like, yeah, it was like an unbelievable, like I had to read the email twice, you know, to make sure. But it's always been an inspiration to us, Drum Code. So we've always kind of tried to work on something to try to maybe fit the label. But this time we kind of did it in a different way, and we try to keep our originality. And I think maybe this kind of worked at a good timing, because I think labels also changed directions over the years. So I think like the direction we were heading musically matched with what Drum Code, I think, was heading in the musical direction. So yeah, it was a lot of work and a lot of, you know, nervous times. I'm really glad it worked out. Yeah, it was just like we got the email because of the time difference. It was like it's like 3 a.m. and we're gonna go, you know, we're going to sleep. It's like, yeah, okay, something came in the email, let me just check. And then we're like, we couldn't sleep.
And then you didn't go to sleep after that. Oh, that's so good. Adam was just there as well recently for Ultra, right?
Yes, yes, yes. So we had the chance to meet him in person and, of course, listen to him play, which is because for us living in Japan, it's very difficult for us to see Adam play live. So it was really nice. He was rocking the crowd and everyone loved it. So, yeah,
He's very happy. He's amazing.
Yes.
I'm super excited for you guys. Is there anything else coming up over these next few months that you're particularly looking forward to?
We're right now, we have some tours we're working on for end of the year and the next year. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to that. I'm going to be back in Europe to play in Germany next month.
And, oh, cool! Where are you playing in Germany?
Yeah, I'm playing in Cologne with at a venue named Art Theater with Bart Skills. So
nice.
I'm very excited for that. And we have a bunch of gigs coming up here. We have some parties that we're working on also here in Japan. So I think we're gonna stay more in Japan for the rest of the year. But there's a few gigs I'll be playing outside of Japan, but everything we're kind of planning more towards next year.
Will you both be coming over at any point to Europe?
Well, that's what we're planning. Yeah, we would love to again, because we had a great time going to Europe together, because it's been a while, and finally, like, our daughter, she's able to travel age-wise, and she loved it too. So I think we'll be going back next year.
Does she like techno?
Depends on her mood. We hope in the future, but yeah. Too much techno running all over the house. So.
Over the house, yeah. She's like the funny. So just to end, I have some really quick, fun, random questions, okay?
Okay.
Okay. The first one is, what is one thing that you always have in your fridge?
So he loves spicy food. And then, he cooked
I cook these it's kind of like these Korean spicy pickles that you can eat with, I put on top of anything, everything I'll put it on top of. So yeah, I always have this in the fridge because I love it. Very spicy. So I would add it on to anything.
I like spicy food as well.
He's Indian and the Japanese mix. So he loves the spicy, strong food.
Yeah, I need my spice.
You need your spice.
Daily.
On everything and anything.
On everything, yeah. So everything. So I have a bunch of hot sauces, hot, spices and everything, always ready.
Yeah.
And then depending on what food, I would choose which one probably matches, and I would always have and make things spicier.
Oh, amazing. Actually, I did, speaking of Adam Bayer, I did a hot sauce challenge with him.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, that was, I can eat spicy, but I had to get up from the table and leave the table because I was crying.
Really? Wow, that's spicy. Wow.
That was really
spicy. I gotta try that.
Yeah, we'll have to send you some over. What is your favorite studio snack?
Studio snack. That we don't really eat snack in the studio, but I mean, if it's drinks, it's coffee for sure.
Coffee,
always. I'll always have a cup of coffee on the studio desk. Always.
Are you both big coffee drinkers?
Yeah, we drink a lot. Yeah, we both drink a lot. Yeah, I love coffee. Since I was a kid, because here, parents used to give us coffee when we were young, so I kind of got used to drinking coffee. I need coffee in the morning.
What's the emoji that you use the most?
Emoji. I don't know. Me, I use this rocket emoji a lot. Yeah, it's the energy, let's go kind of.
Yeah. What's yours, Kyoko?
Black heart.
The heart, yeah.
Okay, the black color of heart. Yeah.
The black heart. The black heart, yeah. Has to be the black techno, yeah. Heart. Yeah.
Yes.
And what is the last thing that you searched for on Google?
Okay, for me, I searched Tokyo weather.
Tokyo weather. And what is the weather like right now?
Because like right now, like I'm playing at this outdoor party this week. So I always check to make sure the weather is going to be good. And now like weather is probably like the best timing of the year to come to Japan. It's going to be sunny like for the next like 10 days, 2 weeks straight. Like usually October, November is a really good timing. You know, not too hot.
Yeah, I remember when I went October actually last time, and it was just perfect temperature.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was my search, which I searched like maybe like 30 minutes before our call.
Is it? What about yours, Kyoko?
Okay. I was looking for clothes for my daughter.
Shopping.
So, he wants
Amazon.
No. maybe Japanese shop. And he wants to get a new dress, like a new skirt, something. Yeah.
Nice.
She does a lot of shopping for our daughter. Like, yeah. Always looking for stuff. And yeah, and our daughter really, like, she always wants to something new.
Buying more things. Finally, I ask everybody the same question on the podcast, because the podcast is called Can You Put Me On Guest List? Do you have a guest list rule?
No, not really, actually. You know, we're very like easy. So we're like, yeah, whoever wants to come down. But we often get limits from the event side, you know. They're like, okay, you know, it's like you can only put this many people on the guest list. Yeah, but like guest list here, it's a bit different, because a lot of the times it's discounted list.
Yeah,
so the wording is very different. So sometimes I get confused too.
So you would never say, can you put me on guest list? It would be, can you put me on a discounted list?
No, they people would say guest list, but it's usually a discounted list.
Okay.
But like my close friends or people like that know this, you know, of course, like it's, they mean it different, but like when we get it from like random people, it's usually discounted list.
What are entry fees like there? Like, for example, how much would it cost to buy a ticket to go to a womb, for example?
It depends on the night, but usually I would say like 20 to 30
okay.
Euros.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, 20 euros.
Depending on the night, yes.
Not bad. Cool. Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much for having
a
chat
with
me. It's been so lovely to catch up with you. So lovely to see you. And I really hope that we can see each other soon and hang out, because it's been a very long time.
Yes, for sure.
So when you're next over, let us know.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. See you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.